This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Welcome, Irreverent Ones. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, co-president, a co-founder of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And I'm Dan Barker, and I'm co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
So how's that work?
Well, I guess we're both co-presidents of the foundation. I'm sometimes called the friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves, and I'll do my best to be friendly today. This is August the 10th, 2011. Free Thought Radio broadcasts from Madison, Wisconsin, and we broadcast in other states, including California, Michigan, New York, Missouri, and Texas, and of course we podcast. And what were you trying to say, Annie Laurie?
Nothing.
Oh, you were waving at me there.
Just being friendly.
Well, tell us about the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation produces Free Thought Radio. It's our weekly show, and we work for separation of religion and government, and we promote non-theism. Our members are personally free from religion, and we have topped 20,000 this month.
20,000 members?
Yes, but we need to... lose members every month. We need to replace them. We want to stay at 20,000. So you can join us, tax deductible, educational, at ffrf.org.
Today on the second half of our show, we're going to talk with one of the Freedom From Religion Foundation's summer legal interns. His name is Charles Rosloff. We're going to talk about what's happening with secular and religious hospitals that are merging in the state of Washington and other parts of the country.
And we'll have a treat, some music and comedy, sort of a sneak preview of Julia Sweeney and Jill Sobule, who will be opening FFRF's National Convention at the end of September here in Madison, Wisconsin. And speaking of comedy, do you have a joke today?
Well, yes, I do. I made up a joke when we were up in Door County last weekend. What do you call a person who does not believe in the tooth fairy?
What?
An ateethist.
Well, that's not a joke. That's a groaner. I think you were telling that joke to our niece, Lily, who's 11.
Well, she laughed at least, so.
But since you brought up the belief in fairies and supernatural beings, we're happy to report our victory in our complaint over the teaching of intelligent design at Ball State University.
And we've talked about this before with Vic Stenger, Andrew Seidel, and Professor Jerry Coyne. Jerry Coyne is the prominent evolutionary biologist at the University of Chicago who first brought this issue to our attention after a non-Christian student in a class at Ball State University reported the proselytizing nature of a professor there named Professor Hayden.
It's taken a couple of months, but FFRF has a victory at Ball State University, which is Indiana, and in fact, we now commend them for their support of science and academic integrity. But this complaint started at the end of May when our FFRF staff attorney, Andrew Seidel, first alerted Ball State officials to the fact that Professor Hayden's teaching style involved teaching intelligent design as fact in a science class.
So we've been waiting for the university to make a decision, and a decision finally did come down. Here's the statement from Ball State University President Joanne Gora. Dear faculty and staff, intelligent design is overwhelmingly deemed by the scientific community as a religious belief and not a scientific theory. Therefore, intelligent design is not appropriate content for science courses. The gravity of this issue and the level of concern among scientists are demonstrated by more than 80 national and state scientific societies' independent statements that intelligent design and creation science do not qualify as science. Discussions of intelligent design and creation science can have their place at Ball State in humanities or social science courses. However, even in such context, faculty must avoid endorsing one point of view over others. The American Academy of Religion draws this distinction most clearly. Quote, creation science and intelligent design represent worldviews that fall outside the realm of science, a method of inquiry based on gathering observable and measurable evidence. Creation science, intelligent design, and other worldviews that focus on speculation regarding the origins of life represent another important and relevant form of human inquiry that is appropriately studied in literature and social science courses. End quote. Teaching religious ideas in a science course is clearly not appropriate. Each professor has a responsibility to assign course materials and teach content in a manner consistent with the course description, curriculum, and relevant discipline. We are compelled to do so not only by the ethics of academic integrity, but also by the best standards of our discipline. The trust and confidence of our students, the public, and the broader academic community are at stake. Our commitment to academic freedom is unflinching. However, it cannot be used as a shield to teach theories that have been rejected by the discipline under which a science course is taught. The best academic standards of the discipline must dictate course content. Sincerely, Joanne M. Gora. And you can read the entire unabridged statement at our website, our press release about this issue.
If you go to ffrf.org and look for the news link. Now, the Discovery Institute was not happy with that statement. They are the ultra-conservative religious organization that promotes so-called intelligent design. Dr. John G. West, vice president of the Discovery Institute, said the memo to President Gora, academic freedom, was designed to protect dissenting and unpopular views among faculty. Redefining it as freedom to teach only the majority view isn't academic freedom. It's a power play right out of the pages of George Orwell's 1984. I can't even read this, Dan. This is so absurd.
Well, they're accusing the university of suppressing free inquiry. The Discovery Institute might discover something about themselves if they actually read George Orwell's 1984.
Now, FFRF has sent a letter of complaint. We've sent many letters of complaint in the last month, but one of them of a special note is to another public university, Troy University in Southern Alabama, and that's about the Newman Center, named for a Catholic higher-up. It's a new faith-based dorm that has just been built on campus.
The Troy University website says, the Newman Center is open to students of all faiths. Preference will be given to students who maintain an active spiritual lifestyle and maintain an active engagement in a campus faith-based organization.
Andrew Seidel, who's one of our four staff attorneys, sent a letter to Troy University on August 1st, and there was a story the next day airing on WTVY4 out of Dothan.
A new faith-based dormitory at Troy University has sparked a debate all across the country. One foundation says it violates the separation of church and state.
The new Newman Center is adding 376 beds for students who want a values-oriented place to live. The idea was embraced by many, but sparked an investigation thousands of miles away.
School leaders say surveys show a hall complete with a chapel is just what students wanted.
Our faith relationship is very important to them, much higher than we normally see in students across the country.
Private donations and not state funds financed the $11.8 million project. Students active in any campus faith-based organization were given housing preference. The Freedom From Religion Foundation says this preference breaks state and federal fair housing laws.
Simply the fact that the government is going to be owning a building that is used expressly for sectarian religious purposes presents another constitutional problem under the Establishment Clause.
It is our position that in no way does this faith-based housing infringe upon the freedom of religion of any of our students. No one's being compelled to be there. No one's being told you don't belong there. It's voluntary for people to want to be part of this community. And there's also plenty of other housing on the campus available for the incoming students.
Move-in day is August 10th, and the hall is completely full. In Troy, Sarah Canty, WTVY News 4.
And that was FFRF attorney Andrew Seidel interviewed in that story. Here's another story, this time from WSFA 12 out of Montgomery, where you will hear that senior vice chancellor of student services, John Dew, admitting that their secular university has a religious purpose.
For the second time in 1 week, a national civil liberties group sets its sights on Alabama. At issue, a new dorm at Troy, built especially for religious students.
Some people are crying discrimination because the Newman Center is specifically designed for those of faith.
We participated in two large national surveys. And what we found in those surveys is that our students had a very high response when it came to the importance of their religious life, their spiritual life. And we thought, we could help with that by having residence halls that will be for bringing together people from different faiths. People of all faiths are welcome.
But the Freedom from Religion Foundation says that doesn't matter. Staff attorney Andrew Seidel writes preferring religious students over non-religious students violates state and federal housing laws. The First Amendment requires the state to be neutral in its relations with groups of religious believers and non-believers. The university cannot lawfully make a determination of how religious a person is and then discriminate among students based on that determination.
We don't feel like we are doing anything that infringes on anyone's rights or privileges.
The foundation ends the letter saying, quote, the best practice is for Troy University to open up the Newman Center to all students, regardless of religious beliefs. The Newman Center should be a dorm like any other. But Troy officials say,
we don't really have any concerns about this.
That dorm also houses Catholic and Baptist student centers. It opens this fall. Now, earlier this week, the Freedom from Religion Foundation also complained about a public prayer at a meeting of the State Public Service Commission. A Prattville minister and leader of the Tea Party included a number of hot-button political issues in the prayer, including gay marriage and abortion. The group Equality Alabama has started a petition asking the PSC president, Twinkle Kavanaugh, to apologize for the prayer. Kavanaugh has said public prayers at PSC meetings will continue.
So a lot of violations going on in Alabama. And aside from the legal impropriety at Troy, these dorms should be open to all students. There shouldn't be religious segregated dorms at a public university. You go to a public university to broaden your experience, not to segregate yourselves from people who are unlike yourself. It sends a message that if you're not religious, I can't even be in the same dorm hall with you.
Yeah.
What a message.
We'll watch what happens with that complaint. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Lori Gaylor. After the break, we'll talk with Chuck Rosloff, one of our summer interns, about merging of secular and religious hospitals.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom from Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Lori Gaylor.
August the 11th is the birthday of Robert G. Ingersoll, the famous 19th century orator and author. He was born in 1833, so this would have been his 180th birthday.
Quite an accomplishment. Robert Ingersoll was known as the great agnostic. He was the best known freethinker in the 19th century America. And by the way, the great agnostic is the title of Susan Jacoby's new bio about Ingersoll.
And we had Susan on our show last December, but her book's out now, so we should have her back on again.
Yeah. Ingersoll was just as famous in his day as any celebrity today. He was a Civil War colonel, attorney, friend of presidents, a famous orator who drew many thousands, even tens of thousands of people to hear his lectures. He said, all religions are inconsistent with mental freedom. Shakespeare is my Bible, Burns my hymn book.
We have no gods to serve or fear, no hell to shun, no devil with malicious leer when life is done. And endless sleep may close our eyes, a sleep with neither dreams nor sighs. We have no master on the land, no king in air. Without a manacle, we stand without a prayer. Without a fear of coming night, we seek the truth, we love the light. We waste no time in useless dread, in trembling fear. The present lives, the past is dead, and we are here, all welcome guests at life's great feast. We need not help from ghost or priests. The hands that help are better far than lips that pray. Love is the ever-gleaming star that leads the way, that shines not on vague worlds of bliss, but on a paradise in this.
And that is part of Robert Ingersoll's poem, Declaration of the Free, which Dan set to music many years ago.
You can learn more about Ingersoll and hundreds of other historic and contemporary freethinkers at FFRF's Free Thought of the Day. Go to ffrf.org/news/day.
And if you're a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, you can sign up to get the Free Thought of the Day calendar sent to you by email to your inbox every morning. And if you really want to become acquainted with freethinkers, then come to FFRF's 36th Annual Convention next month here in Madison, Wisconsin.
September 27th and 28th. On a Friday night, this 27th, we'll give our Emperor Award to Dan Savage.
And then after that, you'll be entertained by Julia Sweeney and Jill Sobule. And Julia, of course, is the actress and comedian, formerly of Saturday Night Live, Letting Go of God. And we've interviewed her on the show numerous times. And Jill Sobule is the well-known singer-songwriter.
And they're making a movie. Here's a bit of the trailer from the Jill and Julia Show movie.
Two legends, one epic night. The concert film of the decade.
You do know that we're two women well into our 40s that you were talking about being in front of the camera? And she said, oh no, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, like, well, the Golden Girls were popular.
I sing.
I tell stories.
The Jill and Julia Show. Love's never equal. The love between two people.
The Jill and Julia, the Jill and Julia, the Jill and Julia Show.
We talked to Julia last April about her newest book, which is very funny. If it's not one thing, it's your mother. She's currently working on another book based on her experiences of visiting a different church each week for a year.
In Portland last year, Julia spoke about her experiences in researching this new book, but first she told us this story.
On Fridays, I volunteer at my daughter's in seventh grade, and on Friday, I'm the lunch lady. They have three parents every day, I guess, but I signed up for every Friday throughout the year, and I have to wear a hairnet and plastic gloves, and I hand out the food to the kids. And last Friday, there was another mother there, and she said, oh, I've seen your work. I watched your show that was on HBO. And I just want to say that I'm really disappointed in your conclusion. And I said, oh, well. And she said, I mean, you did all that work, and you read the Bible, and you traveled to all those places to come to that conclusion at the end after all that work is just so depressing. Like, what am I supposed to say? So I'm trying to be happy. And I said, well, you know, that's the thing about evidence. You can't choose where it points you, you know. I didn't understand. But anyway, okay, so that just went through. And then, so I thought, I'm just going to change the subject. So I said, you know, after school today, Mulan and Michael, my husband and I, are going to drive up to Door County and go camping for 3 days. And she said, oh, we camp in Door County too, and I have a tip for you that will be fun for the whole family. There is a ghost tour of Door County where you go around and see where all the ghosts are in Door County. And I said, Well, I don't know. And she goes, no, you know, I don't really believe in ghosts, but maybe there are ghosts. And to me, this is the perfect typical exchange that I have with people when they don't even realize what they're saying. And I feel like many of the churches that I went to over the last year, the thing that shocked me the most was how they would just contradict each other and contradict themselves or not understand that their worldview in one area was affecting another area, completely oblivious. So to me, that was just so great that this woman was telling me how she was so sad about me coming to this conclusion and then just later saying, the ghost tours are great. Of course, we don't believe in ghosts, but you know, there could be ghosts.
We just came back from Door County, and did we see any ghosts, Dan?
We saw none. That was Julia Sweeney. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. After the break, we'll talk with FFRF legal intern Chuck Rosloff about what's happening with the merger of secular and religious hospitals.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
And I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are happy to have in studio with us today one of FFRF's summer interns, Charles Rosloff, known to us as Chuck, and he's a rising 2L at Harvard University. He graduated from Georgetown University with a computer science major and is from Dayton, Ohio, and you've been working hard all summer, and we're very happy to have you with us.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And you've got some particular interests besides constitutional law in legal. What are those?
Yes, well, I'm interested related to constitutional law, civil rights law, but also intellectual property law and things related to technology that sort of brings in that computer science background.
Well, that's going to be a big field.
Yeah.
And what is your background, your religion background?
Or sure.
Free thought background?
Yeah. Well, I grew up going to church. I went to the Methodist church and then a Presbyterian church. But sort of my entire life have been atheist, though I didn't necessarily put that label on it till like middle school. But I distinctly remember being a small child sitting in a church and like everyone was standing up to pray and I sort of refused to stand up to pray and it just didn't make sense to me.
So you were a little rebel.
Yeah. But luckily, I have great parents, and the churches that I went to were very open and accepting, and especially the Presbyterian one I went to from fourth grade till I graduated from high school. It was just it's a very accepting community and welcoming to people, even people who don't necessarily believe the same things that they do.
They didn't persecute you for being a rebellious kid.
No, they didn't.
Your dad was like that, Annie Laurie, when he was a kid. It just never took. He went to church with his grandparents.
But I think he had a harder time than you.
Yeah.
Christian Church Disciples of Christ.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They put a little more pressure on him. And then they dunked him in a full immersion baptism font at the age of 12, and that was it for him. Well, and so we were really happy to have your application, and you're one of actually five legal interns, four that were full-time, and one of our few remaining for the month of August, and we're keeping you very busy.
You yes. should see them in the office. Those interns are just cranking away, and the attorneys are giving them work to do. I think you guys are doing all the work, and then Andrew and Patrick can take all the credit, you know.
And Liz Rebecca and Rebecca. But we wanted to specifically talk about an issue that came up earlier this summer that you were really in charge of, and we had been wanting to do something, and nobody had had the time to research this very disturbing problem of the merger of many public hospitals with Catholic hospitals. And why don't you talk a little bit about what that complaint was?
Sure. Well, we had several people contact us from the state of Washington, where this happens. It's happening all over the country, but it's particularly prevalent in Washington, where there are Catholic medical organizations and big health systems that are affiliating with, or in some cases purchasing, secular hospitals, previously secular hospitals. And as a result, the hospitals wind up restricting their services based on Catholic doctrine So they don't provide full access to contraception and have strange and strange laws or rules when it comes to abortion services, and won't provide Washington's death with dignity, sort of physician-assisted suicide care, and all sorts of things that the Catholic Church frowns upon.
Or the morning after pill.
Right.
Sterilization.
Yes.
So now, what is going on in Washington State that makes it such a hotbed for this? How many, what are the takeovers going, how many of them are there?
Well, in Washington, there are currently or have recently been about 8 takeovers and affiliations, and a couple of them have not fully gone through yet, but one just completed on June 30th. And it's taking, when once all these have affiliations have completed, it's going to take the percentage of hospital beds in Washington that are in Catholic institutions up to 50%. So half the beds in Washington are going to be controlled by Catholic dogma and doctrine.
Now, some of these secular hospitals are public hospitals, are they not?
Yes, many of them are at least partially funded by the state and by taxpayers.
And almost all hospitals, regardless of whether they're public or not, are getting vast infusions of federal funding, for example.
Oh, yeah. And of course, they also take Medicare patients and things like that. So they're getting public money that way.
So let's talk about what some of the implications are. Well, you did a lot of research. Maybe we should first talk about the Catholic doctrine that people might not realize.
Sure. Well, for medical institutions, there is, in the United States, there's a document called that the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops put out called the Ethical and Religious Directives for Catholic Healthcare Services. And it has all sorts of rules about services that Catholic healthcare institutions cannot provide, and has all sorts of language about how religion is the most important thing, and religion is what's really guiding healthcare decisions and not necessarily what's best for the patient.
So what's an example of what could go wrong for someone who lives only by one of these merged hospitals?
Sure. Well, one of the most serious and life-threatening cases is if there's a woman, a pregnant woman, who is undergoing a miscarriage, something goes wrong, and they need to remove the fetus or embryo, if it's at that stage, from her in order to prevent future traumatic, potentially fatal consequences. But under these rules, and Catholic doctrine say that you cannot remove a fetus or embryo if there's still like a heartbeat. So even if there is absolutely zero chance that the fetus is going to make it to term, if it's definitely a miscarriage, hospitals, Catholic affiliated hospitals, are not allowed to remove the fetus from the woman. And so there have been cases. There was a case in Ireland fairly recently.
Savita.
Yes, Savita Halappanavar, who she died because the physicians waited until there was no heartbeat to remove the fetus.
And by that time, her uterus had ruptured and she
right.
had blood poisoning.
There was, yeah.
And which they would
sepsis.
Have known was going to happen.
Exactly. And a similar case happened, as reported in The Stranger, Seattle, Washington's alternative weekly newspaper. They reported a case where a woman in Washington at a recently affiliated with Catholic hospital, Swedish in Seattle, was denied this similar care, and she survived, and
because she was, maybe they were able to take her somewhere
right,
else,
or because the fetus is, by the time the fetus's heartbeat stopped, it wasn't bad enough that it would cause her death. But she said she was left, you know, sort of shaken and mistrustful of doctors, and that's what happens when when a person cannot get adequate medical care because doctors are refusing it because of the religious beliefs of the hospital where they work.
When the hospital considers religion more important than the health needs of the patients.
Exactly.
And of course, that's even just an emergency. If you've affiliated with a Catholic hospital, you're not going to be doing abortions there generally.
Right. Exactly. And that's what the Catholic institutions and hospitals say. They say we're not abortion providers. But the problem is the Catholic Church considers things to be abortions that the medical profession does not. When the medical profession sees the care of removing the fetus or what have you as treatment, not the purpose is not to end the pregnancy. The pregnancy is, for all intents and purposes, over already. And the treatment is to remove the fetus. The Catholic hospital will see that as an abortion, where the medical profession will not.
Now, you did I'm trying to remember. I think your memo is, how many pages is that?
11, not including the endnotes.
And so I know there was also another chilling section.
What was the memo he sent a memo to?
Did this go out to?
The letter was sent out to Governor Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington, and all sorts of government administrators and hospital administrators.
All around the state.
All around the state, yes.
We're going to take a break. We're talking with Chuck Rosloff, our legal intern, Harvard Law student, about the takeover of public hospitals by Catholic institutions. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the death with dignity issues. And then you have another big issue, which is summer lunches being provided by Catholic institutions. I'm Annie Lurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Lurie Gaylor.
And we are talking with one of our very busy summer legal interns, Chuck Rosloff. He's studying law at Harvard University, and he's given his whole summer to us, and he's been very busy working on a number of issues, including what we've just been talking about, the merger of secular and religious hospitals.
So, Chuck, you were talking about how this goes on. This is not just in Washington State. This is going on everywhere.
Right. It's happening all over the country, and we're keeping our eye on it all over the country. There's an excellent national organization called Merger Watch that has a website, mergerwatch.com, that tracks these Catholic hospital mergers as well. But we recently received a complaint about these hospital affiliations in Ohio, in the Akron area. So we'll be taking a look at that too.
Now, I wanted to get back to the death with dignity issues in Washington State, where they do have laws on that. But what would happen if you are dying and you get into the clutches of one of these Catholic-affiliated hospitals?
Yes. Well, if for the death with dignity, it's a voluntary choice if you have a terminal illness. And for that, it's difficult for people, especially in rural areas where there might not be many hospitals nearby. If they're all Catholic affiliated, then you won't be able to get the consultations and the prescription medication you need to go through with the whole death with dignity process.
And they also won't really honor it, isn't that right?
Pharmacies will not fill those prescriptions if they're Catholic affiliated.
And do you want to read that Catholic dogma about what it says about?
In terms of other end of life issues, first of all, they won't accept any sort of directives about how you want to about withdrawing life support and things. But also, if you are in a lot of pain and you just basically want to be knocked out and you'd probably die as a result. But they have one of those bishop's directives that I was talking about earlier says that patients experiencing suffering that cannot be alleviated should be helped to appreciate the Christian understanding of redemptive suffering.
Huh.
Which is just chilling.
Right.
So half the beds, in the state of Washington are going to be run by the Catholic Church, basically.
Yeah.
They have to accede to their dogma. That is very, very disturbing in a state that you do not consider to be particularly Catholic. Well, thank you for all your work on that. And then there's another big federal issue that you've been working on.
Yes, I've been working on, there's the USDA's summer food service program, which helps provide free meals to children who would normally receive free meals at school during the school year, helps them continue to be fed over the summer.
Which is a very important program.
Yes, yes. The issue that we have with it, though, and the constitutional issue, is that they get sponsors for these programs, and many of those sponsors are schools, but a large number of them are churches as well. And the food service is usually intertwined and surrounded by other sorts of activities.
Like vacation Bible classes.
Exactly, exactly. And so for when the churches are hosting these programs, they are surrounding the federal food service program with their religious activities. And so, and children aren't really,
and
you're supposed to go for the whole day, right? And you're supposed to go to the morning activities and then have lunch and then go to the afternoon activities. And it's all basically, so it's religious indoctrination surrounding a federally funded program.
So taxpayers paying for the proselytizing.
Well, it's a mission field that comes to you, right? You open your doors and here come all these students that we can proselytize.
And it's another case where religion is going to get the credit and taxpayers are going to get the bill. And my question to you, Chuck, would be, why on earth would we even go to churches to administer a summer lunch program when we have all those empty public schools in every neighborhood? Why aren't they the go-to automatically?
Exactly. Well, the sponsors have to voluntarily sign up themselves, and a lot of these churches were the first ones to do so in an area. And of course, and one of the issues is that some of the regulations and policies with the program prohibit the state agencies that actually administer the federal funds from allowing too many sponsors too close together to overlapping coverage areas. So if there's already a church covering an area with its program and a secular institution wants to set up a program, but it's too close to it, it won't be able to.
So once you kind of have a monopoly, once you're the first applicant or
right.
you're aggressive, which many churches are. I mean, what a bonanza for them to get all of these captive audience of kids to proselytize and feed at public expense.
Are there complainants? Are there people who come to us with problems about having to go into a church, somebody's church?
Yes, we've been paying attention to this for years now. There's currently a lot of activity with it, actually, because August 2nd, the Office of Management and Budget sent out a memo to all sorts of federal agencies telling them to implement regulations in accordance with an executive order talking about for these sort of faith-based programs and programs that are run by religious institutions about separating the religious content from the federal program in time and place and making sure there's no religious discrimination when administering the federal program to beneficiaries.
But still, parents who want to take advantage of that free daycare, you know,
right.
and as well as the food, they won't have any other choices if they have a church monopoly on
them. They may not have any choices or may not have any convenient choices close to them.
So at least that executive order may be as a result, Patrick Elliott was working on that, maybe as hopefully a result of FRF's complaints to the Department of Agriculture over the years. But I don't think there should be any public-run summer programs going on in religious institutions when we have all those secular public schools. But so we're looking forward to reading a memo from you on that. And what else did you find interesting that you worked on this summer?
Well, it's been a great opportunity to work on a wide variety of issues. There are so many different violations of the Establishment Clause going all over the country, and I've been able to work on at least a couple dozen different types of violations, whether they're prayers by various people in schools or prayers by government officials or...
Did you do the Coleman, Alabama thing? Did you work with
Andrew? I've worked on that some. That's the prayer caravan happening led by a county school superintendent in Alabama. So there's so many different... I feel like I've barely worked on the same issue twice.
Well, that's good, I guess.
Summer.
Well, that's bad too. It's the variety, the great ingenuity of the theocrats in entangling religion and government. We have so many violations. Is this something that you would want to see yourself going into, this field? Or did you get enough of it this summer?
Well, I've certainly enjoyed my summer, but it's hard to know going forward what I'll wind up doing and what I'll wind up being drawn to.
Now,
I definitely want to explore my various options and interests.
Now, I am hoping, maybe you're hoping too, that you'll be able to do a little work. Maybe you've already done some work probably on our amicus that we're preparing for the Greece case that's going up to the Supreme Court about government prayer. Have you been working on that yet?
Just small things here and there.
So, one of the things we were doing is gathering the statistics on how many complaints that we have received. But we hope before you leave, you'll get to do a little bit more on that, because that amicus brief is going to be kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting case.
Well, thank you, Chuck. It's been fun having you at the office and working. We're talking with Chuck Rosloff, who's a summer legal intern for FFRF, who's studying law at Harvard University. Thank you, Dave, for producing again and engineering a good show. And to find out more, go to ffrf.org/news/radio.
Join us at ffrf.org, or you can ask for more information. You can ask for a free copy of the very interesting August newspaper, 24 pages. We have all of our student essay winners, the high schoolers, and all kinds of news. You can also phone 1-800-335-4021. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.